The Lord bless you today. It's getting up to Christmas, and I appreciate that people are sometimes get a bit stressed out with all that's got to be done, to say the least. So my word this morning, actually, is not going to be a heavy word. It's not going to be an intense word, and yet I trust it will be a blessing to us. I wasn't meant to be ministering this morning, so it's a sort of a it's not a last minute something. It's something I've done before, but different other things added to it. I just want to talk about the Lord as our shepherd, and the shepherd and the sheep. Just make it. It springs not just from what I've got down here in notes, etc., but something I actually saw on a program on the television. So I will mention something about that a bit later on. But in Hebrews, we're told that Jesus, it says that the God of peace, who brought up our Lord Jesus from the dead, that great shepherd of the sheep, the great shepherd of the sheep. And then Peter, in his epistle, he says, "You were like sheep going astray, but you have now returned to the shepherd and the overseer of your souls." And when Moses was about to die, and before the children of Israel were going into the promised land, his one concern was that they would not be without a leader that would take them in to the promised land. His job was done, and he knew that. And so he asks the Lord to set a leader over the people, to lead them into the land. And the Lord, of course, chooses Joshua. Joshua is chosen out of, out of just him and Caleb, really. And he says, he asked the Lord, he says, "A man who may go out before them and go in before them, who may lead them out and bring them in, that the congregation of the Lord may not be like sheep which have no shepherd." That was his greatest concern. He'd been their shepherd for that number of years, and now he was really concerned that they would be without a shepherd, somebody that would actually lead them in and take his responsibility that he had borne before the Lord for that time. And so the Lord, as I say, answered his request. So I just want to be talking, as I say, about the shepherd and the sheep. And, you know, shepherds are as old as Abel. They actually go back to the very beginning of creation, because after Adam and Eve, it says, "Then she bore again," "she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the ground." So Abel, right from the very beginning, he was the keeper of the sheep. He looked after the sheep. The Hebrew word for a shepherd simply means to tend a flock, to take care of a flock. But it also means more than to tend it. It means to pasture it, not pastor, P-A-S-T-O-R, but pastor, P-A-S-T-U-R-E, lead it to its grass, lead it to its place where it's going to be fed, etc. But it also has the meaning to associate somebody as a friend. It's not just to pasture them or pastor them or be whatever and look after them, but to actually associate them with as a friend. And that is what our shepherd is like. And Psalm 100 and verse 3 says, "Know that the Lord, Jehovah, he is God." He is God. The Lord, Jehovah. And then it goes on to say, "It is he who has made us, and not we are his ourselves. We are his people and the sheep of his pasture." We are the sheep of the pasture of the mighty Lord God. Brothers and sisters, we are so blessed. We are so blessed. And he tends us and he keeps us. And he is, as I say, our greatest friend. What I want to do is just give you a little bit of the background, etc., and just the life of the sheep. If I can, I'm not a sheep, and yet I am a sheep, a spiritual sheep. And I want to major really on the Eastern shepherding, not what we see in our country at this particular time and in the Western world. In this program I saw on the BBC, and it's a very interesting program, and I'm going to watch the other episodes of it. It's called, I think, The Secret of Farm Animals, or something like that. And this one I just happened to watch. I thought, oh, that would be interesting. And it really is a joy to watch, actually. I recommend it because it's going to be a sequence of other ones. But the one they majored on last week, I think it was last week, I saw it on my iPlayer, was sheep. But there's other animals in it as well. And interesting facts. You learn about these animals. You know, we go and we look at things, you know, the documentaries about these exotic beasts in other countries and these ones that are in for extinction and different other ones, and we see all about their habitat and what their ways of living. We have some very interesting animals in our own country and some of the things that they do, and you see the design of the Lord. And I'll come to something about that later on, actually, just in these. But anyway, this particular program, it had more about the sheep on this particular farm. It happened to be in Wales, in the northern part of Wales. But anyway, before I get to that, it's the Eastern shepherding I just want, because that's what the Bible's talking about. The way of Eastern shepherding is a bit different from the way of Western shepherding and the old ways of doing it, the times. And we're talking about Judea. And we know that in Judea, there's a narrow central plateau, apparently, where the sheep tend to feed, and they pasture along here, and it's got danger on the sides of these plateaus. So there has to be a shepherd to take care of them and look after them in this particular area. The grass there is actually very sparse or sparse. There's no protecting walls, and the sheep wander up and down this plateau all over the place. So the shepherds have got to ceaselessly keep their eye on them and watch them so they, in case they come to any harm. So this is the picture of the shepherd and the sheep there. That's why when it says in Psalm 120, when the shepherd of Israel, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. And the shepherds had to be like that. There were no pens to keep them in as such up on this particular plateau. So the shepherd has to keep watch on the sheep so he's ever awake. We know that the shepherd always has to find food for the sheep. And he's got to find grass, and he's got to find water in a dry and a stony land. And because they're not fed in pens, and in summer, in the summer and the winter, they've got to depend on foraging, etc., and grazing for their food and their substance. And that's true, actually, and I'm spiritualizing this, of course, but those in leadership and in ministry, our responsibility is to find pasture for the sheep, to lead and to guide, spiritually speaking, but in the Word in particular, because that's where we get our food from and different other books that help us and commentaries, etc., etc. But it's up to the sheep to eat the food, and it's up to the sheep to digest it, otherwise it does them no good whatsoever. But having said that, the flocks are watered at least once a day, and their water is found either in small little brooks or they're found by digging wells. And it's interesting, apparently the shepherd, I don't know whether it's the same now, but I'm going from biblical times and a few hundred years ago. The shepherd apparently carries a pail with him, a bucket or whatever sort of thing, with some water in it so that the sheep can drink when the water is not easily accessible. And you think to yourself, how can he feed a flock of sheep with a bucket? He must be carrying buckets and buckets, but apparently they don't need a lot of water. They take a lot of water actually from the grass, but they don't need very much. But it just struck me that sometimes, you know, when we feel dry and we don't seem to be able to find some water to drink, he's always there with enough, just enough to keep us going until we get a bigger supply. And we often feel dry, don't we? If you're anything like me, we do feel dry, and we do feel as if we've been in a wilderness and a desert. Some of you might be feeling like that at the moment, and it's hard and it's tough in the Christian life and in the world in which we live. But there's a beautiful verse in the Song of Solomon. It says, "Who is this coming out from the wilderness or the desert, leaning upon her beloved?" And how many times do we as people feel like that, coming out of that wilderness, leaning upon our beloved? But the most famous verse, or the most famous chapter in the Bible about a shepherd, of course, is the 23rd Psalm. I'm not going to go into that in great detail, but it very simply starts off, doesn't it? The Lord, Jehovah, is my shepherd. I shall not want. A very simple expression. I shall not lack. I shall not be impoverished. I have everything I need. And it says in the Psalms as well, O fear the Lord, you his saints. There is no want to those who fear him. The young lions lack and suffer hunger. But those who seek the Lord shall not lack any good thing. And that is the testimony of the goodness of our shepherd. But it goes on there, he makes me to lie down in green or tender pastures. And he leads me beside the still waters. Apparently, whether this is correct or not, but I'm led to believe that sheep actually will not drink from running water. It has to be still water. Whether that's correct or not, I know it's coming, something that I remembered reading or hearing about somewhere. But it's the will of God for us, isn't it? That to lie down in green, tender pastures, to be fed, to be contented spiritually, and at ease and rest in everything he is and everything he does for us. But unfortunately, we wander off, don't we? We don't go where he's actually needed. But when we're in that place, it's a very precious place to be in. It's a place of peace. Isaiah, it says, he will feed his flock like a shepherd, and he will gather the lambs with his arm and carry them in his bosom and gently lead those who are with young. That's very simply the tenderness and the compassion of the shepherd that we belong to. It's not quite the same in this country, but in these sparse areas where they're not near anywhere where they can be protected, etc., when a little lamb, and especially if it's a frail one, when it's born on the mountains and in sparse land and not much grass, the lambs are carried in the arms of the shepherd for a few days, and then they're put down on the ground to learn on their own. But in those few hours or days, there's that sense of security. And didn't you feel that when you first got saved? That sense of the love of God. There's nothing like those first moments when you're first saved. Alan mentioned about the Passover this morning. And the blood of Christ has cleansed us. We're clean. We're a new creature. And we just know that he's our shepherd. I've mentioned it before, but this is the very first thing. The morning I woke up after seeking and crying out for the Lord for salvation for a number of weeks and not having any peace or assurance, etc., I woke up one Saturday morning, having prayed the night before about it. I woke up and I knew I was born again. I knew I was saved, and the only thing about Christianity that I could remember, because I wasn't raised a Christian, was the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want, and I sang it, and I remember going to work in the winter, in the snow, on a little minibus from Cologne to Bonn, because I worked at the embassy there, and I was singing this in my heart. I wanted to sing it out loud. Maybe I mind the Germans in the little, but they're all Germans except me, so they would have understood it anyway because they understood English. But that was so real to me at that time because I knew. And he's been my shepherd ever since. And I wish I could often feel that feeling that I once had when he became my shepherd in the first place. You get a little picture of this, don't you, in that parable that Nathan told to David after the episode with Bathsheba. And I just want to read that little verse that he says, the poor man had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished. And it grew up together with him and with his children. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup and lay in his bosom. And it was like a daughter to him. And apparently, I was reading this morning, I was looking this up, it was, and I don't know whether it still is, the custom of keeping a pet sheep in the family, just like we keep pet dogs and cats. Apparently amongst the Arabs at that time or whatever, it was the custom to have a pet sheep because the dog is an accursed animal. But the sheep, and I thought, I don't think I'll keep one, but remember we talked about keeping a sheep once because of the garden. We hate gardening and our grass is that long, and Alan had the idea of us and them sharing a sheep. But then the thing was, at the end, I said, what about when it gets old? He said, oh, well, you kill it then and get another one. I was none too happy about that, so we decided against that idea. But sheep are regarded, aren't they, as docile, and they are actually responsive to affection. But I'm not too sure whether it's too good for them to stay as one little lamb in a family, a human family, because actually being with other sheep is what we need, isn't it? Otherwise we'd be mollycoddled and won't learn anything, and they need to be with each other. But again, the shepherd also not only leads the sheep to pasture, etc., and takes care of them and loves them, he protects them from the weather and from the fierce animals that are all around. And I remember reading many years ago about the shepherds of those times. Now, we have our shepherds that have their shepherd's crook or their dog and their whistle and everything else like that. And we don't picture them in any way as fierce and warlike. They're just not like that in the West. But in the East, whether they are now, but they were and are. It says here, he says, they look more like warriors marching to the battlefield. They are dressed to the gunnels, as it were, and they've got guns nowadays, pistols, daggers, light battle axe and clubs to ward off the whatever it is that might come and attack them. In those days, of course, it was lions and bears. They're not there anymore, but they've got the other animals as well. And it's interesting, in the Bible times, whether this is right or not as well, because sometimes you read things. Nowadays, I think you get a little bit more suspicious about what you read with all this fake news and everything else that goes on. We used to accept everything that was in black and white as that was it, was true. But I'm led to believe that if you had a Bible, in the Bible, if you had a sling, as David did, and you let that stone out of the sling, it traveled roughly 90 miles an hour. So you can imagine why it did what it did to Goliath. But that's what they had. They were warriors going forth. And one man said, when he saw, this was probably back in about the 1800s, when he saw one of these shepherds, he said he had fierce, flashing eyes, and they had scowling countenances, showing but too plainly that they were prepared to use their weapons at any moment. That is our shepherd, brothers and sisters. He fights on our behalf. And if anybody, woe betide anybody that tries to attack his sheep, because that's when he comes in as that warrior shepherd on behalf of us and his people. But also, we know that that famous parable as well. What do you think? If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them goes astray, does he not leave the 99 and go to the mountains to seek the one that is straying? And if he should find it, assuredly I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than over the 99 that did not go astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father who is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. And you know, that chapter, excuse me, starts with Jesus talking about children. He's explaining the kingdom of heaven, and he takes a child and he brings that child in front of them all, and then he uses this story, this illustration here. It's all about children. We can tend to dismiss children, can't we? This is all about children, and also obviously about us as well as spiritual. But the shepherd leaves 99, and Luke says he left them in the wilderness, not in a safe pen, not being guarded, not being protected by the dogs or anything like that. He leaves them in the wilderness. And it's, again, I'm not going into detail on this, but there is safety, brothers and sisters, in united fellowship. There is safety in united fellowship. In Hosea, he says, I will heal their backsliding. I will love them freely, for my anger has turned away from him. He loves the backslider. He loves those of us that go astray from time to time. These are truths that we know, but I just wanted to just remind ourselves of them again. But I want to read John chapter 10. And let me read it here, just the first 14 verses. Most assuredly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs up some other way, the same as a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice. And he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he brings out his own sheep, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. Yet they will by no means follow a stranger, but will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. Jesus used this illustration, but they did not understand the things which he spoke to them. Then Jesus said to them again, "Most assuredly I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who ever came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not hear them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. But a hireling, he who is not the shepherd, one who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf catches the sheep and scatters them. The hireling flees because he is a hireling and does not care about the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and I know my sheep, and I am known by my own. As the Father knows me, even so I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep." That's the famous passage about the Lord as the sheep, isn't it, the shepherd. And it's talking about 100% commitment and devotion. And it's total selflessness and total love. I am the good shepherd, and I lay down my life for the sheep. But he mentions there about the wolves, doesn't he? And the wolves that come in the sheep's clothing, as we would call it. And when he writes, or when he speaks to the Ephesian elders before he leaves them, and he knows he's never going to see them again, he says this: "Take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers, to shepherd the church of God, which he purchased with his own blood. For I know this," and I think this is one of the saddest things that Paul knew. Some things you don't want to know. But he says, "I know this, that after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also," and I think this was is the worst part, "from among yourselves, men will rise up, speaking perverse things to draw away the disciples after themselves." What a thing to have revealed to him. He had practically laid his own life down, hadn't he? When you read about what he suffered, etc., etc., for the sake of the church. He said, "I've got the care of all the churches upon me." And he knew that there would be wolves that would be coming in, and he was warning them to beware of these. And brothers and sisters, we've seen it in our own nation. We've seen it down through the centuries. There have been wolves always. That's why it's so important to feed on the word. It's so important to have those that minister the word and share the word. It's so important to be part of a fellowship, to be part of a flock, to be part of a people who can help and protect one another in the days, especially in which we live. There is so much going on in Christianity today, and many, many sheep do not know where to go. They don't know where to go. In this time, and it's true of sheep today as well, many of the flocks at this time also, they gather outside the city, outside the town, if they have to go back. And we know this fact that each shepherd has his own call, his own way of calling his sheep. When Jesus says, "They hear my voice," etc., they've got guttural calls, or they've got shrill calls. In our country, they have whistles, don't they? And they use them for the dogs. But each shepherd is recognized by his own sheep. And it's interesting. I'll come to that in a minute. I'll explain that in a minute. Because what I've done is I've got some of these notes here, but I want to just go and explain a few things that I saw in this program as well, which will bring it to you'll see it a little bit more. What I want to just bring about now, spiritually speaking, and applying these truths to us, the sheep's reactions and the sheep's relationships to the shepherd. We tend to think the shepherd is there and the sheep are just grazing along and that he just looks after them until they're fat and for their wool or for their meat or whatever else like that, and he's got a dog that whistles. That's the way we see it here, isn't it? When you actually go on a sheep farm or when you see the shepherd with his sheep, it's a lot different to that. And each sheep reacts differently to the shepherd. Some sheep keep very, very close to the shepherd and they follow wherever the shepherd goes without any hesitation. Wherever the shepherd goes, that sheep or a number of sheep are close to them and follow without any hesitation. But there are others who are continually straying from side to side. They go this way, they go that way. They wander over there, they wander over there. And they are the ones that are prey for the enemy. You only need one sheep straying off and a wolf or any other animal to come and it's gone. The shepherd with those sheep, he often turns round and he scolds them. He rebukes them in a way with his voice. He even throws a stone at them to get their attention and to bring them back. And in extreme cases, he makes them lame so that they cannot stray away from him. That's extreme cases. And I think the Lord does that, not physically, but sometimes he, well, it's a bit like Jacob, isn't it? They have to be taught to follow, and they're taught to follow by the shepherd and also by the older sheep that have learned a few lessons along the way. And sometimes he calls sharply to the sheep to remind them of his presence. But the ones close to him never need a reminder of his presence. He never has to call to them and he never has to speak to them. They're just in his presence. There are some very few sheep, as I say, that always keep near the shepherd, and it would appear that they are his favorites because out of his little bag, he gives them choice delicacies that they have. But he doesn't give those choice delicacies to those sheep to attract them to him. He gives them because they're already there. That's the difference, isn't it? And those sheep always respond joyfully. They had a reaction when he speaks. There's something about them that just responds joyfully. And they are the most contented and the most happy ones. And they never wander into danger. And nothing ever harms them because they're really close to the shepherd. Most of the flock are intent on their own pleasure and their own selfish interests. In other words, heads down, munch, 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 munch. And they go sometimes from bush to bush, and occasionally they lift their heads up to see where the shepherd is or where the rest of the flock are. Then they put their heads down again and they're quite content to go on. Some of them are continually restless, continually discontented, continually jumping into everybody else's bit of land or bit of field, continually climbing into bushes. They're the ones that often break their legs and are constantly a trouble to the shepherd. And I think, God forbid that I should ever be like one of them. I'm just telling you this, these are the facts, and I want you to just apply them to yourselves, spiritually speaking. When they have to cross a river, or a shallow ford, that is, there's no concern to the shepherd. He just walks ahead of them, because in the east, the shepherd leads his flock. He walks ahead of them, and there are some sheep that just absolutely enter quite boldly into this little river and ford and just go straight across with no fear, no bleating, nothing at all. They just follow completely. These are the loved ones, again, that keep close to him, whether they're in pasture or going through water. And sheep don't like running water. And the other sheep follow their example. They see where the sheep are going, and so they follow. And that's how it is and how it should be down through the ages, isn't it? The older generation, the younger generation, etc., etc. But, you know, others enter with a bit of fear and a bit of doubt. And sometimes, because of that, they miss the ford and the shallow part and are swept away a little bit in there, and they struggle, and they make a lot of fuss and a lot of noise about getting out. They eventually get out, but they make such a fuss and such a noise that everybody else knows what trouble they've been in. I don't want to be like that either. You understand what I'm saying here? We've got to mature. We've got to grow up. I'm not saying that we don't let people know that we're having trouble, but there are some people that seem to want to know, everybody to know what a hard time they're having. We're all having hard times in different ways. And sometimes we can make more of a situation than we need to. And the Lord is just saying, you know, keep your eyes on me. I will take care of you and bring you through it. Some refuse to enter. And if the shepherd has a dog or anything else, he makes them go. And they leap and bleat, but they get there in the end. I'm going on just by bit by here. Let me just read Psalm 80, just part of it. Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, you who lead Joseph like a flock, you who dwell between the cherubim, shine forth. Before Ephraim, Benjamin, Manasseh, stir up your strength and come and save us. Restore us, O God. Cause your face to shine and we shall be saved. O Lord God of hosts, how long will you be angry against the prayer of your people? You have fed them with the bread of tears and given them tears to drink in great measure. You have made a strife to our neighbors and our enemies laugh among themselves. Restore us, O God of hosts, and cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved. That is the prayer for Israel's restoration. Give ear, O shepherd of Israel. And you know, sometimes he does lead us in situations and circumstances where we do cry, where we do call out to him, where we feel abandoned, etc., etc. But it's also that he can work it out for our good. That's why they say, restore us, O God of hosts, and cause your face to shine, and we shall be saved. Sometimes, brothers and sisters, he does do these things to us. He does allow certain things to happen, not because he doesn't love us, but because he actually does love us and he wants the best for us. Now, they're the notes, and it has been a little bit patchy this morning because of the situation and circumstances I found myself in about ministering this morning. But I just want to give these notes that I took down as regards how sheep are in this country, and that might be a blessing to you as well. There are 33 million sheep in this country. We actually have 25% of all the sheep in Europe, in Britain. Did you know that? We're a bit like New Zealand, or they've got a lot more than us. So. And all the sheep can be traced back to the flocks that lived in the Middle East by the genetics, etc. But they've been bred to cope with the different countries that they're in and to give different meat or different wool. And that's why you have a lot of different species and shapes and sizes of sheep. And sheep are what we call grazing animals. But because they are grazing animals, they're also what we call prey animals. And they need provision and they need protection from their enemies. But the question came up and it arises, are they as dim as we think they are? We always talk about these, you know, silly sheep, stupid sheep. They're not actually. They're a lot wiser than we think. They are highly social animals. Highly sociable and social. And they've got extraordinary levels of empathy with one another. And they are also very good at recognizing faces. And amongst their own flock members, they can recognize at least 50 members of the flock, which is quite a lot, you know. And they recognize. And what they did was, they did an experiment to see, you know, if this was true. And they had these life-size pictures of two sheep from their own flock. And what they did was they took pictures of the heads of sheep from another flock in another farm, 100 miles or whatever it was away, and superimposed them on the head of these two sheep from their own. And they had the picture of the real ones, then they had, over here, they had a picture of the imposters. And they let the sheep in. They grazed, a few of the sheep, they grazed, and they went towards the ones with the real faces. And when they got to the ones with the real faces, they were there and they were grazing and they were quite happy. They came up and they were sort of looking at them and as if they were socializing with them, and they were completely happy. But when they moved over to look at the imposters, who had the bodies, same bodies as their friends of their flock, but different faces, they recognized that they were not of their flock, and they wouldn't go near them. They just bleated. In actual fact, they bleated a bit louder as to say, "Who are you?" But they recognized the faces of the others. And they switched it around, and they did it again as well. So they thought, well, if they recognize sheep faces, do they recognize human faces? Do they recognize humans as being different? So they took the farmer, dressed him in a sort of orange-type suit, and they took a lookalike of the farmer. They put them in this place, and one sat over there and the other sat there, and they both had a box with food in it. And they let the sheep in, and the sheep came to the farmer that they recognized and who had food. None of them went to the other one. And they thought, okay. So when they took the sheep out, they then swapped the two men and put them in the places differently. So when the sheep came back in, you would think that they would go to the place where they got the food from the first, but they didn't. They went right past the imposter and right up to the box where the farmer was that they knew. They recognized. And when the Lord says that he knows his sheep and they know him and he is, do we recognize the face of our shepherd? Do we recognize him? Do we recognize the faces of our spiritual brothers and sisters? Those that are real and those that are imposters, because there are many in the Church of Christ. It's interesting as well. When they're jumping up and down, the youngs, the gambling and frisking around, it's not just for fun, it's actually making their legs and bodies stronger. But it also helps to confuse the predators. And it just showed, because they synchronize with one another. And it showed these two little lambs, you're all going to be watching this program now, aren't you? They show these two little lambs just standing there. And then when there was a little bit of danger, they both, at the same time, leapt up into the air, turn around like that, jump down, and then leapt in the same direction like that. And apparently, they can do that in a split second. And when they're all doing that, it confuses the predator. Maybe we ought to do a bit more jumping up and down. But it's all that they're much wiser than we actually think they are. And then what about burying their heads? Because they're in the grass, they're burying their heads, and you think, they are so vulnerable to a wolf, aren't they, with their head down. That's all they do all day long, head down, nom, 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 nom. And you think they're so vulnerable to a wolf or any other animal. And you think, and that's what gives us the impression that they're a bit stupid and they wander off into danger, but that is not the case. Sheep have one of the most remarkable eyes in the animal kingdom. Their pupils are not round like ours. They are actually rectangular. And because they're rectangular, they can maximize much more light can enter into their eyes than human eyes. With us, we have got a scope of 190 degrees, I'm led to believe. This is what they were saying. And our peripheral vision is actually quite poor. I can see there, but if I want to see over there, I have to turn my head, and vice versa. Sheep don't have to do that. They have a 320 degree. That's a lot, isn't it? And it's all crystal clear. And it's like having eyes in the back of their heads. So when we think they're not looking, They can see more than we can. And the wonder of it is, it doesn't stop there, because this is what thrills me. Talk about God being the designer and looking after his sheep and making sure his sheep have got everything they need to be protected and know what's going on. When it lowers its head, you think, well, okay, all it can see then is the grass. That's not true, because their eyeball rotates within its socket. So when it's got its head down, its eyes actually are like that as well. So that in actual fact, when they've got their head down, they can see absolutely everything around them, in front of them. And they can be grazing away, and they can see if the shepherd is coming from the back here, or anybody else, they can see him coming as clearly as that. And I think, it's got a perfect view of what's going on in front, around, and beyond. These are the sheep. And I think, Lord, give me spiritual eyes like a sheep that I might see all of these things. Another interesting thing, a flock is an ideal family unit amongst the sheep. They protect each other from the predators, and they teach the youngsters how to behave. And if the lambs in particular are threatened, it's got an ultimate support group, and they call it Sheep United. because they all stick together, and where one goes, they all go. And it's an ultimate show of group cooperation in this flock of sheep. But there is a rider to that. In actual fact, even though they're in that group and flock, each one of them is looking out for number one. And that's true of every one of us, isn't it? Which is right. We have to look after our own spiritual life. Unless we are all right, then we've got nothing to give to anybody else. Because what they do is, they did an experiment, because the sheep always try to get into the middle of the flock, because they don't want to be on the edges. Because that's where the enemy's going to come, and that's where the enemy will devour them. It's just like the children of Israel coming out. The Amalekites came and picked them off one by one because they weren't quite in together. And the idea is to be in the middle of the flock, the safest place where you can't get eaten by the wolf. Because you don't have to outrun the wolf, you have to outrun the sheep behind you. See what I'm saying? That's what it is. They're wise enough to know all of that. And they painted, in this experiment, they painted a group of sheep with things down their back, according to their age, according to the etc. and different other things like that. And they had them in a field, and they made a dog chase them to go through the gate. The younger ones got through first, then the older ones, and then the mothers with their lambs, etc., and everything else. And when they got into the other field, it was new to them, and so they had to sort of see what was going on. They noticed that the younger ones got in there first, and they were all like that, but the older ones, the more sensible, mature ones, all made sure they got into the middle, into the safest part. And no matter which way the flock went, they were always found in the middle, the safest and most secure place in the flock. And it was the less mature ones who were in danger of being caught by any predator. Interesting, isn't it? This is the flock. And let me close it now with just a few thoughts. When they're taken up to the mountain pastures, especially in eastern countries, but also here, the lambs will follow their mothers. And it showed you in North Wales, they were going up the mountain tracks. They go over a few little brooks and things. When they get up to the mountain, the ewes, they recognize certain waymarks, certain monuments, certain stones. And they haven't been there for a year since the pasture that they've been taken down from. And they will take different paths. Some will go to the right, some will go to the left. And the farmer said they have an inbuilt sat-nav. They know exactly where they're going, to their spot, to the place where their family have grazed for years, where they belong, where they've grazed before, where it's familiar to them, and they know what they're going to have all across the mountain. That is actually taking place. They never leave the knowledge or lose the knowledge if they're of their own grazing spot. Interesting, isn't it? They are very clever. They know exactly where they're going. They know the exact time of the year. They can smell the rain, and they can sense the weather changing a few days before it comes. Do we? Do we? The tribe of Issachar knew the times and what Israel ought to do. So I've just given you a little zoology lesson, biology lesson, whatever lesson it is, because I just wanted to give something that was interesting, not too challenging, but challenging, I hope, because it's something that we all need to take into consideration. But we have a wonderful shepherd, don't we? And we are sheep of his flock. So the Lord bless you, brothers and sisters, and I do recommend you watching those programs, just because, not because they're in, but it's, I look at them and I think, Lord, you made these creatures. You, interesting things you're going to, well, it was just a joy to watch, actually. And we have to be blessed by the creation of the Lord, don't we? So the Lord bless you. And I'm sorry if I've gone on a bit too long this morning, but amen.